The Pre-Flight Paradox. Are we checking all the wrong things before takeoff? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Bob Miller Flight Training in the Buffalo, New York area, also the publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Normally on Mondays, we get together and talk about a topic from Bob's latest edition of the newsletter. Today, we're going to deviate from that just a little bit and talk about a conversation that Bob had that prompted a discussion, and we're going to share that discussion, let it spill out here where you can hear it. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Well, Paul, it's always a joy to be with you and talk about these topics.
Well, let's talk about something you are tentatively titling Pre-Flight Paradox. And this is kind of an interesting topic to get into when you talk about safety, because our focus on safety, all the NTSB investigations into causes of accidents seem to deal with mechanical issues, what went wrong with the plane, what went wrong with procedures, weather, all this other stuff. And yet, it's very rarely about the aircraft.
Yes, Paul. I had a unique pleasure of meeting with John and Martha King this past week. We had a Cessna Pilot Center gathering, and you know, I'm oftentimes critical of organizations within the general aviation community, but I'll tell you what, I have the highest regard for John and Martha. They are spot on when it comes to speaking openly and candidly about safety issues. And John made a rather telling observation when he said, you know, if you look out at the average GA pilot, he or she will do a very careful job of pre-flighting the airplane. They'll lift ailerons and lower flaps and check elevator attachment points. They'll look at the brakes. They'll examine that airplane very, very carefully, on the one hand. And on the other hand, when you talk with them or wonder about what kind of pre-flighting they did with regard to human factors or the risks associated with any given flight, a detailed weather analysis or even their own physical, mental, or well-being to conduct that flight, very often that is not the subject of a pre-flight inspection. When you look at the accident data, on the other hand, the last recorded failure of an aileron attachment point that resulted in a fatal crash was sometime back in the early 1970s, you begin to see firsthand that the real risks of flight are human factors, risk factor analysis, and this is something that is not being carefully looked at by we, the GA pilot, before beginning most flights.
You know, I remember thinking about this stuff when I was in training for the private pilot certificate, and we were going through the chapter on human factors. And you know, you can read through those and you can understand what they all mean. But when it comes down to anti-authority or macho or any of those other factors, I looked around the classroom at the other students sitting there with me in ground school. And I said, I wonder how many of these guys who face these issues are able to admit it to themselves. And that seems to be kind of the argument that's on this whole topic.
Well, if you look at those psychological profiles, they are indeed profound. I mean, the anti-authority or the invincibility, it cannot happen to me. These are very, very powerful psychological profiles. I can say that because I too display these profiles and have from time to time. But if we could exercise the same discipline in self-analysis as we do in pre-flighting the aircraft itself, there are lots of us who believe that the fatal accident rate would tumble. I mean, if we really looked at the need to conduct any given flight and look at the risks, do I have to be there at that other end? Do I have to be, do I have to take this flight in order to get somebody back to work the next day? If we really look at those risk factors as objectively, as we look at aileron attachment points on the airplane we're about to fly, we could see, again, a marked reduction in our fatal accident rate.
You know, I tend to be an analytical person by nature, to a fault sometimes. I sometimes frustrate the people around me. I often end up doing things that people would call risky, but I always like to know ahead of time what I'm getting into. And before I ever went to ground school, I spent about 8 or 9 months looking at NTSB accident reports, and I would look at all the new ones that came in every day. And the thing that I was left scratching my head with, I wanted to know, you know, you can look at accident and fatality rates and clearly see that general aviation is much more dangerous than airlines. It's more dangerous than driving a car. However, I needed to know, are these things that are within my control, or are they just a roll of the dice? And the frustrating thing I found was that every single one of them, Bob, it seemed like, you know, they talk about how 80% of these things are human factors, or pilot error. But when I looked at them, if you count human maintenance errors and other human errors, they almost all are. It's almost never about a wing attachment point coming off or losing a propeller.
You know, you're absolutely right, Paul. I have seen, or you can ask the average pilot, would you jump in the airplane without, you know, pulling it out of the hangar and jump in an airplane without pulling the dipstick and checking the oil or something in the tanks? And most of us would say, no, I would never, ever jump in an airplane or do a mag check prior to takeoff. I'll always do that. I've been taught that this is just basic 101 flying skills. And yet, I have seen the same people get in an Cessna 172 with three heavy people. When I'm saying heavy, over 250 pounds each with full fuel. And I'm saying that pilot, I watch him check the oil, did the mag check, did the pre-flight, and once did he consider the weight that he was putting in the airplane. I mean, that is a human decision apart from the mechanical factors of the airplane. Very few of us will actually pull out a bathroom scale and say, here, step on it before you get in the airplane. You know, we like to eyeball the weights of our people before they get into an airplane, particularly when you're flying a light single like a Cessna 172, and it's got four seats in it. So we load four people in it, and we just sort of tacitly say, yeah, they look like they're okay. And truth be told, that airplane's probably taking off 250, 300, possibly 300 pounds overweight. Did they bother to check that? That's just one simple example of a human factor analysis or a risk factor assessment. Thunderstorms, you know, we may be trying to get out of an airport before the passage of a thunderstorm. We don't really put a lot of stock in that other than to rush through it, but in the process of rushing through it, we'll still do a mag check, we'll still check the oil, we'll still check the aileron attach points, and we're giving short shrift to the real risks that are often the cause of most fatal accidents. Remember, only 10% of all fatal accidents are attributed to mechanical factors of the airplane. Over 80% are attributable to human risk factors or human decision-making that went essentially unaddressed in many cases in the pre-flight stage of that flight.
Well, and then if you look at some of the other factors too, I mean, overweight is something the NTSB is going to clearly find and identify. But there's a whole big group of aircraft accidents that wind up with explanations along the lines of, quote, pilot failed to maintain control of the aircraft, unquote. And if you went back far enough, you know, did the guy have a fight with his wife before he left for the airport?
Sure.
You know, is he under some kind of pressure at work? Did he get enough sleep? You know, there's a lot of subtle things that enter into this, too, that are at least as important as checking the aileron hinges.
Sure. Continued VFR flight into IMC conditions, the number one weather-related cause of accidents. How much of this was really addressed? The possibility of encountering IMC conditions by the VFR pilot prior to departure. Yet in every case, we in the flight training community absolutely teach you must check those aileron attach points. You cannot dispatch an airplane without checking the oil. You cannot go out onto the active runway without doing a mag check. These are beaten into us in lesson, and we do it too as a flight school. But are we really beating into the student the need to look at these human factors? And I think this is coming to the forefront now as we see more and more and more of these issues. Let me go back very quickly to the fatal crash of 3407, Continental 3407. Goodness knows the FAA regulates Part 121 operations with volumes and volumes and volumes of rules, regulations, and so forth governing the mechanical condition of that airplane, yet very little is said on crew rest requirements and crew training requirements. These are human factors. So that was a very telling recent example where human risk factors were at work and then very seldom addressed in that pre-flight process.
Well, we certainly are up against the point of diminishing returns on paying more and more attention to the hardware, that's for sure. Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about some news at Bob Miller Flight Training. Bob Miller is my guest, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, and also of Bob Miller Flight Training, now a Part 141 school. First, Bob, congratulations.
Well, thanks, Paul. It was a lot of work. A lot of people helped out, but we passed muster, I suppose, and the FAA has granted us that air agency certificate that enables us to operate under Part 141.
Well, now, I guess the first question I have to ask is, given your positions on how Part 141 training was done back when we started doing these podcasts together 3 years or more ago, would it have been possible for Bob Miller Flight Training to be or even want to be a Part 141 school had it not been for the acceptance of scenario-based training?
Well, no, I think I would not have been a Part 141 school had it not been for my critics, and there have been many. When I became very critical and outspoken on the deplorable conditions that exist within the traditional flight training community, my critics would say that, Bob, you're operating under Part 61. You're not regulated like we are under the Part 141 environment. Under Part 141, you have mandated curriculums and approved syllabuses and requirements that you dare not deviate from because you're under the daily or certainly the very recurrent inspection of the FAA. And I said to myself, you know, these critics are making a valid point. I'm not comparing apples and to apples. I'm apples and they're oranges. So I said, to be intellectually honest and still try to make a point, Let me make the groups comparable. And the only way I could do this was to become a 141 operator myself. And then I set out, and I'm doing this right now under what I call a grand experiment. Can I accomplish two or help to address two very, very serious problems in general aviation and do it under the constraints of Part 141? Those two major problems facing general aviation today are, number one, the continued unrelenting fatal accident rate, which still is 100 times more risky than airline travel, 350 some odd fatals a year. That has to be addressed. And number two, the fact that less than 50% of every new student who walks through the front door ever comes out the back door with a pilot certificate. In other words, we're suffering a dropout rate at the private pilot level that exceeds 50%. And that was the second goal. So reducing the fatal accident rate or trying to address a system that will address the fatal accident rate and reduce our deplorable or abominable, I should say, student dropout rate. Could I do this under Part 141? Now, in fairness, we've been a Part 141 operator as we speak for about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm operating under a different set of constraints with approved FAA syllabi, and we're going to set out and still hope to make our point operating under the same rules and regulations of the very schools that I've been critical of.
Well, Bob, I, for one, will enjoy watching how you handle this new minefield. I know that any number of people in your area will be watching to see how you navigate the minefield. In fact, some of the people in the area are part of the minefield. But anyway, I applaud you for doing it, and we'll keep track and check in with you often to see how it's going.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
You can find Bob Miller's latest newsletter and sign up to be notified by email when a new one comes out at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.